options. The Special Air Service, the history of the secret British Special Forces unit from World War II to today, chronicles the major events and the hidden history of the SAS. You will learn about the British SAS like never before. The Origins of the SAS. The spring of 1940 was a moment of awakening for the British. Between May and June of that year, upwards of 330,000 Allied troops of the British Expeditionary Force were evacuated from the beaches of Dunkirk as German forces stormed through Europe, taking France and forcing Britain out of Europe. These events, as tragic and difficult as they were a vindication of Winston Churchill and the other jitterbugs who had warned consistently that German belligerence needed to be taken seriously. A military establishment, still wedded to grapeshot and horseflesh, needed to rapidly embrace advances in military thinking already clearly adopted in Germany. However, having swallowed the unpalatable facts of Dunkirk, and with the Germans firmly established in occupied Europe, the question then became what to do as military resources and forces were being built up for a reinvasion of Europe. After the conclusion of the Battle of Britain and the failure of the German Luftwaffe to pave the way for an invasion of Britain, the only theatre of war active was North Africa. This would not develop into a major conflict, however, until the Italian invasion of Egypt that would commence on September 9, 1940. It would be this campaign that would set the ball rolling in North Africa, commencing a war of massive manoeuvre, and the first major British entry into mobile tank warfare. Traditionally, defeated armies resorted to guerrilla warfare, at least those unwilling to acknowledge defeat. But the British were certainly not prepared to do that just yet. British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, the Prime Minister with the most accrued power of any British leader before or since, and also head of the Defence Ministry, was particularly keen on an aggressive response. He wished to take the war to the enemy. A now frequently quoted memo exchanged between him and head of the military wing of the War Cabinet, Lord Ismay, offers a clear insight into what he was thinking. What arrangements are being made for good agents in Denmark, Holland, Belgium, and along the French coast? Enterprises must be prepared with specially trained troops of the hunter class, who can develop a reign of terror down these coasts. First of all on the butcher and bolt policy, but later on, or perhaps as soon as we are organised, we could surprise Calais, Boulogne, kill and perhaps capture the Hun garrison, and hold the place until all the preparations to reduce it by siege or heavy storm have been made, and then away. This was radical thinking for the times. Just over 20 years earlier, the curtain had fallen on what was, at the time, the biggest war in history, when minds frozen in past wars decimated a generation for lack of adaptive strategy. Churchill, of course, was not without blood on his own hands. Gallipoli, after all, was his brainchild. But he also could recall an earlier experience when the rules of warfare had been challenged in precisely the way he was proposing now. Between 1899 and 1902, British forces were engaged in the first major conflict of the 20th century, the Boer War, and in standard British fashion, the blunt instrument of massive, overwhelming force quickly defeated the Boer on the conventional battlefield. However, when the Boer utilised traditional methods of guerrilla warfare developed during the long native wars, the British were, for a long time, powerless to respond. Churchill saw action in South Africa only as a journalist,